What it do, Hardwood Knox listeners? I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario is ready for the Utah Jazz to stop sucking co-host Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started with our Eastern Conference check-in via a mailbag, so thank you all in advance for the amazing questions that you sent in to Andy the other night, I just have our usual housekeeping notes. Above all else, please, please, pretty please with sugar and everything else that you like on top, continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to Hardwood Knox wherever you get your podcasts. We can be found everywhere, including YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can still help us the most by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, even if you're not using iTunes. We just need to see those numbers goes up. It helps the podcast get found. And as we see the numbers go up, I will maybe pester you less about rating and reviewing us there. Follow Hardwood Knox on Twitter at Hardwood Knox. Follow Andy on Twitter at Andrew D. Bailey. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. Also follow the Blue Wire Podcast Network on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. Last but certainly not least, shout out to this week's sponsor, Roman. You will hear their ad read in a minute. They can help men with all of their health needs, basically. We're going to talk about some awkward stuff in that ad read, but don't you worry. Roman is here for you guys. With all that out of the way, though, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Still recovering from another terrible performance by the Utah Jazz, but I'm ready to redirect my attention to the Eastern Conference and get off that topic.
If you had to nutshell it, what is the Jazz's issues? We covered this in the previous pod, but it has to be more than shot selection at this point.
Yeah. They don't. For the last few games, I think there's a serious lack of effort on the defensive end. They're not connected offensively. I think the biggest problem is still the fact that their leader in usage for each of the last three seasons is below average in efficiency. And Donovan Mitchell, at some point, he's going to have to figure out how to get to the line or take more threes or something. The loss of Mike Conley, even though he was shooting terribly, has hurt them too. I think he was kind of a stabilizer, especially for that first unit. The starting lineup's net rating was great this season, despite the struggles team-wide. But I know you just told me to nutshell, and I gave you like five things. Maybe a nutshell answer would be the bench too, because they've been terrible. It's hard to nutshell a team that has so many problems right now.
Fair enough. Here's another team with a lot of problems, the New York Knicks. Since we've last recorded, they have fired head coach David Fizdale. That was kind of fait accompli. I think we all saw that coming from the moment that Steve Mills and Scott Perry held that impromptu post-game press conference. I think it was November 10th or around there. And then reports came from all over, including from Bleacher Report's Howard Beck, that the Knicks remain enamored with going after Raptors president Masai Ujiri, and there was also a report that he rejected a lucrative contract extension over the summer and that he may be fascinated by the Knicks job. What do you sort of make of all of that, the latest in the world of Knicks?
Well, you know, if they wound up with Masai Ujiri, I do think that's certainly an upgrade. He's got a great track record with, you know, even before Toronto, he did some really good things with the Nuggets. He obviously built a championship team in Toronto. And more than that, he's built a team that's had sustained success even before and after the Kawhi Leonard trade. He builds teams with depth. He has a knack for finding talent outside the lottery. He's made a lot of good trades throughout his career. I do think he brings some stability to the front office. It would be interesting to see if that stability that he brings can win out over all the chaos that has come with James Dolan over the last, whatever it's been, 20 years, 25 years, I don't even know. So if they were able to pull that hire off, I think Nuggets are not going back to his stop before Toronto. I think Knicks fans would be rightfully excited about that. But I would have tempered expectations just because as long as Dolan's there, I think you have to be a little wary.
Right, and that's what this comes back to for me is I know it's a little bit different with executives than it would be player free agents. The Knicks can offer Masai Ujiri all the money under the moon, and perhaps there's something about the undertaking of, hey, if I can build a winner in New York, which hasn't won a championship in roughly six centuries, you know, I'm immortalized, probably more so than I am for whatever job I've done with Toronto. That being said, I still think it matters that Dolan's there if you're him, because it's not like he's playing for this cash poor franchise. You know, MLSE, yeah. the ownership group of the Raptors, they have deep pockets. And there's also the allure of that challenge of building another title contender in Toronto post Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's another form of validation. And to put maybe Toronto on the map as a free agent destination, or just this place that's now known for churning out contenders and developing players, and even sort of those, you know, second or third chance guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's playing well right now, I don't think that's unappealing, unchallenging, or stale at this point, which is why you would think he'd leave Toronto at all. And again, if it's a money issue, I can't see the Knicks outbidding Toronto to the extent that it would be a no-brainer for him to leave. My other thing is, and I've seen people say this, is that James Dolan has stayed out of basketball matters through the past two regimes, with Phil Jackson and then Steve Mills and now Scott Perry. I'm calling bullshit there, because one, part of a good team governor is that they're going to step in and put the right people in place so that they don't have to meddle to a detriment. James Dolan, we know, has meddled to a detriment in the past, and he's not putting the right people in place. It wasn't Phil Jackson, and it's certainly not Steve Mills at this point, who has been with the franchise for way too long. I think it was Bleacher Report's Howard Beck wrote a piece where he pointed out that Mills has now been promoted like three times within the organization. You don't get to say that he's not part of the problem then. And then also, if you go on the radio, I don't care what reporters are saying or what people around the league were saying about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving definitely going to the Knicks. We know that that's what they were saying. He went on the radio basically a month after the Kristaps Porzingis trade and declared that they were going to get free agents. That's meddling. And then he's most likely, allegedly, the reason that Scott Perry and Steve Mills gave that wildly out of character post-game press conference this season. That's meddling. So we have two instances within the past year where he's meddling. And there's other stuff going on. You think that Richard Jefferson tweet from New York's PR didn't have like James Dolan's stamp of approval, or that wasn't demanded by him? Not everyone in Madison Square Garden can be that rampantly stupid. And so he continues to meddle, even if people don't see it. And the fact that I've seen people saying this doesn't fall on him as much as it does, you know, Mills or Fizdale, is mind-blowing to me. You know, maybe most of the blame is at Steve Mills, but you have to look at the guy who's not only installed him inexplicably because of that whole Glenn Grunwald situation after the Knicks were actually good for a season, but has now allowed him to sort of steer the franchise into this directionless hellhole that it's in right now. And that's just what's gotten me the most, is that people continue to kind of fall for the James Dolan hasn't meddled. And I think that's a deterrent to not only free agents, but to a guy like Masai Ujiri. And so I would be shocked if he ended up with the Knicks.
I think directionless hellhole should be the name of your debut album.
It's not an overstatement. Who's their fortune's turning prospect? It might be RJ Barrett, but he can't hit free throws. And people have pointed this out, like, the Knicks are just not the place where you trust them to develop or maximize their young talent. Kevin Knox, yeah. I mean, even Mitchell Robinson still fouls like crazy. So it's, I just, again, directionless hellhole, I think, yeah, fitting. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or, sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and again, discreet. Getting started is equally easy. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Again, just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/BlueWire for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/BlueWire.
Should we dive into this mailbag?
We should. Let's cannonball. Let's not even dive. Let's just cannonball.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna kick it off with something near and dear to your heart. This is from Mackinac 32. Which team will make the first trade of the season? And I guess we can restrict this to the Eastern Conference, and maybe just tighten it up a little bit. Which Eastern Conference teams do we think are going to make some trades?
It has to be the Cavaliers at this point would be my pick. And maybe there'd be another Eastern Conference team involved in that trade, but with the report that players are growing frustrated with John Beilein's approach, like he's treating it like a college team.
That didn't take very long, huh?
No. I mean, my whole thing is just because he's older, I'll say, the timeline always felt weird, but he's not even a half season into his first NBA coaching gig. Like, can players maybe give him a little bit of leeway? And I know it was probably mostly veterans, although The Athletic had reports, I believe it was from Joe Varden, that it wasn't just the veterans saying this. Like, it has to be, I thought there'd be more of a leeway period for him and just everyone involved, but it does seem that, although Tristan Thompson kind of came out and just crapped all over anyone that was talking behind Beilein's back, which I thought was really cool and has made me just appreciate this Tristan Thompson season more than ever. It just seems that there are going to be moves made in Cleveland, and the no-brainer one would be Kevin Love, just because he has the 3 years and like 90-ish million left on his contract, and he doesn't fit their timeline. And he's someone who I think, even though the money feels a little bit weird, perhaps not this season, but looking towards the back end of that deal, he does feel like someone who would be fairly desirable.
Yeah, I think the money is certainly a concern, but I think you can find some realistic suitors for him around the league. I don't think the Carmelo Anthony thing has gone quite as well as some would have you believe, so maybe Portland is still an option. The obvious problem there is then you've got, you know, we just mentioned the money for Kevin Love. You compound that with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum's contract, and you've got a really untenable roster structure there, in my opinion.
And the other problem there, too, is that Portland is 11th in offensive efficiency right now, and maybe that'll go down because...
Yeah, so maybe that's not the problem.
Hands up, Rodney Hood tore his Achilles. That was devastating. He was having such a good year. But they're 20th in defensive efficiency, and Kevin Love isn't going to help you
that
there.
That doesn't help.
I mean, he'll help your defensive rebounding, which has been ass this season, but it's, he'd be a good fit, but for what? And I don't know that you'd have to give up a ton of value for him, but they also need wings more than ever, and so now it's like, do you give up? Because I'm sure Cleveland wouldn't want Hassan Whiteside's expiring deal. Do you end up giving up? I know Kent Bazemore hasn't been good, but do you give up his expiring contract now for a big?
Yeah, that's a problem because then that's what I was going to get into next. The ready-made trade from this offseason was like, oh, well, Hassan Whiteside's salary matches perfectly with Kevin Love's, but now he's basically the only center left. Zach Collins is hurt. Yusuf Nurkic is, obviously hurt before the season even started. So, And Whiteside has not been terrible this season. You've pinpointed a lot of concerns with that potential fit. There's a bunch of teams in the East that I think are going to be in the trade market. We've already talked about the Knicks. If they haven't accepted this already, they need to understand that all those veterans should be available. Marcus Morris, Bobby Portis, Wayne Ellington, all those guys should be on the block.
Marcus Morris is a good name for Portland. This should probably be something that we dive deeper into when we do a trade season pod, since that's coming up. But that's, you said that name, and that he would be, him or Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala. Those are probably the names that make most sense for Portland.
For sure. The Cavs have Kevin Love, but they also have Tristan Thompson. I don't know if anybody would want Jordan Clarkson as like an eighth man. Maybe your first or second option offensively off the bench. Charlotte has some veterans that could maybe help some people. I think Marvin Williams could help some teams. So there's a bunch of names throughout the Eastern Conference with some talent that might be available.
Could you see anyone trading for Tristan Thompson at that number, 18.5 million?
I meant to mention that too, actually. And I'm currently working on a slideshow, as you well know, because I've pestered you about it like probably 10 to 15 times. Trying to find a trade for every team in the NBA. And I've got a slide dedicated to the Kevin Love suitors. And so for Cleveland specifically, I was trying to find something that made sense for Tristan Thompson, like who can take on that contract. And it's pretty tough. And on top of that, I think it was Joe Varden who reported just, within the last week that if the front office is committed to one of the veterans, it would be Tristan Thompson, which kind of makes sense given what you said about him earlier, that he came out in defense of John Beilein. He's only 28 years old. You know, maybe the rest of his prime could be spent in this rebuilding time with Cleveland, but they have to at least be exploring what they can get for him. And, you know, maybe if they can get, you know, a couple second round picks, something like that. But salary wise, it is difficult to find a good match for him.
And I like that you mentioned Charlotte, too, just because I know they're sort of like hovering around the East playoff picture right now, because the East playoff picture is just absurdly depressing a little bit. If they eventually kind of, you know, they're three games out as we record this. And so that might be far enough. But let's say we fast forward to January-ish and they're even further out. A guy like Cody Zeller would be a name for me. 2 years left on his deal. And yeah, he's cheaper than a guy like Thompson. Obviously more money left on his deal, but it seems like it's just easier to squeeze that number in. It's $14.5 million as opposed to $18.5. And so that might be a name. I think one of those like sort of under the radar names to watch in these two. And the other team, I would say, I wouldn't pick them to move first. Definitely Charlotte, New York, or Cleveland would be my pick there. But the Bulls, do they start looking at moving off pretty much anyone? Maybe specifically the free agency acquisitions. Do you want to keep Thomas Satoransky long term if you don't know where you're going or how quick your rebuild's moving? Maybe Thaddeus Young is a name that might catch some people's attention too.
For sure. We're going to actually backtrack a little bit. This is from Thomas J. Hacker. What's the best return Cleveland can get for Kevin Love? What team is the best fit for him?
Some people have cited Phoenix. I'm actually not. I'm not a fan of that fit because Dario Saric is playing well. He's not hitting his three ball.
Saric is playing well, and I think Cameron Johnson can play some four. And
Mikal Bridges too is playing out of his mind lately. He's shooting I'm approximately 2 zillion percent on cuts right now, and I know he's shooting almost. I think it's 55%+ from three over his last six games, and that was after he was someone I originally thought would the Suns sell high on. Could someone pick him up on the trade market just because he wasn't playing consistently to start the year? But now it feels like he's sort of hammered out a role, and he's been playing well. And he's not your de facto four, but you have Johnson and Saric, and I'd even rather appreciate more looks with Mikal Bridges at the four than I would with seeing, you know, Kevin Love play with DeAndre Ayton or Aaron Baines, even though both of those are bigs that he could theoretically play alongside.
Yeah, I've heard the Phoenix stuff too, mostly just from media, not mostly, entirely just from media. And I think I have all the same concerns that you have. I wouldn't be mad if they were exploring that potential idea. I've also, the No Dunks pod talked about Sacramento, which I found somewhat fascinating the other day. I think Miami is kind of interesting because they've got some contracts that I think are, you know, they're basically only there to be traded at this point with James Johnson and Dion Waiters. And they've been really, really good this season, a lot better than I expected. But I think it would be nice if they still had a legit number two option on offense. And maybe that's a slight to Goran Dragic and Tyler Hero. They've had a lot of guys step up in games here and there. But I think Kevin Love would raise their ceiling. And I think they have enough defensive players to sort of cover his limitations on that end. So Miami's one that fascinates me a little bit for Kevin Love.
They would be my pick, is probably the best fit for him playing alongside Bam Adebayo. And then I like Sacramento's interesting too. For me though, if you're the Kings, you'd have to be getting off Dwayne Dedmon's contract in the process for me. Or Corey Joseph's. And he's just become more essential because of De'Aaron Fox's injury. But I you would have to get off of one of those deals. It couldn't be, you know, I don't even, who else do you move when you're looking at salary filler? I mean, Trevor Ariza is on an expiring deal, but you would have to get off, and there need to be a sweetener in there, obviously, because I know Dwayne Dedmon has the one less year when you just look at the way the guarantees shape out. Or actually, it's, I guess, two fewer years when you look at the way the guarantees shake out. But unless you're getting that deal off in the process, I don't really know if I like it that much for Sacramento, who, I'm not going to lie, I'd rather see Harrison Barnes play the four for them.
Yeah.
Than I would Kevin Love.
I think I already know the answer to this question then. Would you give up a first round pick for Love if you're the Kings?
It would have to be heavily protected, and you would have to be getting off Dedmon in the process. Even Bielitsa's playing. He just dispatched the Houston Rockets the night before we recorded this. So
yeah.
Who needs Kevin Love when you have Nemanja Bielitsa?
Bielitsa has been like criminally overlooked for the last two or three years. He's very good. The deal I have, spoiler alert, in the article that'll be up this week is it's pretty much exactly what you laid out. It's Deadman, Ariza, and a first for Kevin Love. So you get off the Deadman contract. The Ariza contract is filler at that point. And then you have Kevin Love, but then I think you do have some fit issues at that point. Because like you said, Bielitsa has been great. Harrison Barnes should he should have been a four his entire career. People keep trying to make him a three, and that's just not a great idea.
He's fine, though, there when he's playing for Sacramento, though. So I guess that helps the fit.
And I think if you look at the resulting – you know, potential lineups there, it is intriguing. If you've got De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Barnes, Love, and Holmes, or Bogdanovich, Love, and Holmes, I think they can do some really interesting things offensively with that group. But I mean, it's not a perfect deal by any means. And it's hard to find perfect deals for any team, really. So I think Miami's probably the most interesting one to me, but I can see the logic behind people throwing out the Kings and the Suns and even the Blazers still.
I'm with you, though. I think Miami's the most intriguing one for me.
Yeah. So this is a real specific suggestion from @air_rec20. But I kind of want to use it to set up a larger discussion. He asks, what would it take for a Ben Simmons, Drew Holiday swap? My thought that was triggered by seeing that tweet was more, you know, we've heard talk now for at least the last couple seasons about, can Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid really fit together and really work together long term? And I've always personally thought it was way overblown. I don't mind the fit with those two near as much as other people do. So should Philadelphia even be considering any kind of a Ben Simmons trade?
It's not going to happen this season because he's a poison pill after signing his max extension. And I think you look at it, if you flop in the playoffs this year and it's just not working, I would absolutely look at it. I don't know that the Drew Holiday swap makes sense, mainly for the Pelicans. I don't know that I love the Ben Simmons, Zion Williamson fit. You have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball there. You'll run into a ton of the same issues, but I'm with you. I think it's being overblown at this point. But if we get to the playoffs and it's just not working and Ben Simmons becomes this borderline liability, I think you've upped his trade value by signing him to a contract, because I do believe there would be more than a handful of teams willing to give up primo or close to primo value for him. You're just not there yet. And feasibly, you can't be, again, just because of the poison pill provision. But this wouldn't be a problem. I would, if it's a problem at all, but this wouldn't be something I'd look at for the Sixers, throw out the contract status. This wouldn't be something I look at until this offseason at the absolute earliest.
Yeah, I don't think I would either. Maybe it's just because I'm so high on both of Simmons and Embiid, and I think they're still young enough to figure it out that I'd be willing to wait a while. But like you said, maybe if they get squashed in the playoffs, that'll change my opinion. All right, let's move on to @Al5252. This is very early for this question, but who do we see coming out of the East and why?
I believe we both picked the Bucks to win the East or finish first in
which
the East.
But feels pretty good now.
We were also, yes, but I was nowhere near as high on them as they've played right now. And
yeah,
so
either.
They're not, I guess you could say they're a team that I was one of the teams that I was wrong about at this point, which is fine. I don't really know who's going to beat them. I'm at the point where I'm not sure that it's Philly. It could be a full strength Boston is a little bit more interesting to me, and maybe even a full strength Raptors team is more interesting to me against the Bucks. But for them right now, it just seems pretty clearly Milwaukee. And this is, you know, I had reservations about their wing rotation beyond the main wings to start the season. They've navigated that well. Brook Lopez, by and large, has not shot well on wide open threes, but he's been a pretty big defensive monster for them. So there's still things that I don't necessarily love or like about their team, and I want to see what Eric Bledsoe looks like in the playoffs. But dude, they're just absolutely bulldozing the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee's the default pick at the moment. Giannis is somehow even better than he was last season, which is just wild. And like you said, Lopez hasn't even started shooting, you know, like he did last season, and maybe that kicks in at some point, and they've still just been dominant. So I think Milwaukee is in its own tier at the top. I keep misspeaking today. And then I think, are we ready to add Miami to the next tier. Like, I think Toronto, Boston, and Philadelphia are all pretty close. Is Miami in that group too? I mean, right now they're third. It's super early, and I think I still have, you know, some questions about the roster, but they're a lot better than I expected too.
I agree. I'm not there yet. And maybe I should at this point, because they're more than a quarter of the way through their season. I don't trust their offense. They're 12th in offensive efficiency, which is actually a drop off what they've been. They're third in effective field goal percentage. They commit turnovers more often than anyone else in the league. I don't trust it. I feel like it's going to fall off at some point, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think that's fair. This is a fun one from Paul Dolores at Pag Dolores. What do you guys make of the Pistons? I'm at a loss for words to describe this team's direction.
Oof, man, maybe we should have invited Lazarus Jackson, friend of the pod, for this one. I don't really know what to make of the Pistons. And I don't
Nor do I.
I know there have probably been calls for them to blow it up, but you're two games out in lost comm from a playoff spot of an Orlando Magic team that in itself has not really been great this season. And so I just don't know. You have good games from Derrick Rose. Langston Galloway's been shooting the ball well. Blake Griffin has been up and down, but his three ball by and large has been falling. I don't know what to make of this team. I'm wondering if, you know, would, let's say, a healthy Reggie Jackson give them a jolt. I don't know. I also just don't know if there's a trade out there that they can make. It's when you look at the payroll right now, and if you want to blow it up, I do think you could find a taker for Blake Griffin. But then what are you telling yourself leading into this summer when Andre Drummond has stated basically that he's going to decline his player option? I honestly don't know what to make of this team. I'm happy to see that from what I've seen of the Pistons, that the Thon Maker minutes have been decreased, because Christian Wood just didn't know a ton about him, but the way he can move with the ball in his hands and putting it on the floor, just the fact that it was even a question Joe Johnson could make the roster over him at one point is really astounding to me.
And I forgot about the Joe Johnson thing. I also have no idea what Detroit's direction is, and I think that's why they should start over. I don't necessarily think they should trade everybody, but I think everybody should be on the table. I just looked this up the other day, and over the last 20 seasons, or I think it's, I can't remember if I did the last 20 seasons or the last 10. But their 22nd win percentage over the last 10 seasons, if you limit it to the last like five, it bumps up slightly to 17th. This season, like you said, they're a game or two out of the playoff hunt. I think they're just year after year churning through mediocrity. And I think if they keep the team the way it is, they're going to continue to do that. So I think they should be exploring whatever assets they can get for every single veteran on the roster. I think even Andre Drummond should be available. If you re-sign him this summer, I think that's a great piece to build around going forward. But if you can get a good return for him this season and avoid his free agency altogether and just sort of kickstart a rebuild, I think that's an option too. I would put literally everything on the table if I'm the Pistons, because this team is not competing for a title anytime soon. And I don't even think it's one of those teams where you can say, well, you don't have to compete for a title because you're good every year and you get, you know, playoff experience and people like to cheer for a good product. It's just a mediocre team year after year after year. And this is a lot easier for me to say, you know, from an office in Wyoming than it is in a front office for a team. But I would much rather blow it up, be terrible for a few years than to just be stuck on that treadmill of mediocrity.
Yeah, I agree. I also misspoke. I had looked up pull-up three-point percentage numbers on Monday, and Blake Griffin, relative to his volume, was among the league leaders and was shooting better than 36% on them. But I didn't see their game against the Pelicans where...
Did he just go like 1-for-9 or something?
Yeah, and so I looked at that, and he's over his past 8 games, he's shooting 35.4% from three, but he's 31% on the season. And that 35.4% mark, that 6-of-7 outing he had against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are just giving up all the victories to other teams right now, is doing a lot of work there. So he's been, and look, he's coming back from, it doesn't even, of the couple games I've seen him play, it doesn't even look like he's at full bore really. And he was playing on one leg, not even just in the playoffs last year, but to really end the season. And so I don't know if that's a lingering issue. And then that in turn, you know, you're talking about everyone should be on the table. What do you get for Blake
Griffin? That's true.
If he looks banged up and when he's owed 2 years and $75.8 million after this one. I'm even Andre Drummond at his number, $27.1 million. I'd be curious to know which team comes in there. Maybe in Atlanta, just because they might see.
Atlanta's who I've pinpointed for him for like 2 or 3 weeks now.
My whole thing, though, is if you're doing that, it's because you think the Pistons are going to re-sign him in free agency because the Hawks are going to have the cap space to go out and get him this year. You don't need to give up equity.
That's true. Fair point.
Well, here's, let me ask you this. If your team blow up the Pistons, do you think Detroit deconstructs this year? Or do you think that they're going to kind of stand pat and go after the playoff berth?
Start that question over.
Do you believe that if you think they're going to blow it up, do you think they will?
No, I don't think they will. I think they should, but I think that's easier said than done. And I think, like I said, it's a lot easier for me to call it out here. And I think they're just kind of locked into what they've been. I don't know. That's like a real sad and lukewarm way to say it, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. What about you?
I don't think they're going to either. I guess in part because I don't see the pathway to doing it. But Blake Griffin now all of a sudden means so much. And just the season he had last year, I think they might be willing to. Last year. I think they might be. I had him ranked, I think, as a top 16 or 17 player entering this season. And so maybe I should have been a little bit more conservative with that, given his knee injury. But I feel like he was so good last year. And because they don't have that clear path to really starting over, that they might be more inclined to ride this out. Because if he does improve, if he put, you know, let's say it's, you know, after the trade deadline, you know, late February, early March, and he really starts putting things together and is healthier, I don't know why all of a sudden it would click, but they become a team, I don't know if you could say to be reckoned with in the East, but again, the East is sort of wide open, or at least that eighth spot is sort of wide open right now.
Yeah, but I just don't know. I don't know what getting the seventh or eighth seed does for Detroit at this point. They're not like the young, plucky team that we can say, well, at least they got some playoff experience and now they can build on that. I don't know if there's another team, and maybe this gets back to the original question, like what's the direction with the Pistons? I don't know if there's another team in the league that screams mediocrity more than this one has over the last several seasons. They just don't really do anything for me either direction. And I feel like I was more passionate in that rant than I was a lot of other things. So maybe they do.
Definitely more impassioned than you were talking about the Jazz for some reason.
At KCE Gamer. A lot of people have talked about this topic, so maybe we don't need to spend a ton of time on it, but he just asks if the Nets are better without Kyrie Irving.
I'm going to say no. It's okay. It's way too early. I feel like it's way too early to ask that question, and you won't even really know the answer. Let's say he comes back and they get worse. You're not even going to know the answer until Kevin Durant is there.
True. Yeah.
This maybe they're more fun to watch without him. I don't deny that. But they also don't have Caris LeVert right now. And this is the type of basketball that they're playing is not going to be able to be floated in the playoffs.
So I'm with you. I don't think you can give a definitive answer to that question. I will say, though, I think there's something to teams just enjoying playing when the ball is moving. Everybody gets a touch. Everybody's moving around a little bit. I do think that sort of peps up a team offensively, and not that like Kyrie's the kind of, I think he's a ball stopper, but I don't think he's like a James Harden level ball stopper by any means. So they can still do a lot of the things that they're doing now when Kyrie Irving comes back. But to me, there is just something aesthetically pleasing for viewers, and then just sort of basketball pleasing for the players when they get to touch the ball, they get to be involved, everybody gets to handle a little bit. So I don't know how they maintain that when he comes back, and I don't know if it's critical either. Like you said, we don't really know what this team is going to be until Durant comes back, and there's just a lot of questions with the Nets, and like you said, it's probably really hard to answer that one right now. Alrighty. Oh, we kind of already touched on this. And maybe we can dig a little deeper. We'll see. At Kevin Cold 4 and then at Derek A. Spencer _ they both asked if Miami is legit.
Just what does legit mean? Do we think that they're going to be second or third?
Yeah, I'll frame it the way that I guess we already answered this question, so maybe we don't need to spend a ton of time on it. But I was about ready to say it, but then as it was coming out of my mouth, I decided maybe not. Are we putting them in that tier? And I guess you already said no, because I've got Milwaukee in its own tier, and then there's Philadelphia, Boston, Toronto, or is it those three? And then the next tier is Miami and Indiana. I don't know.
They might be in a tier all their own. That might be a way to put it. Maybe you have, if you have Boston, let's say you have Milwaukee by itself, and then you have Boston, Toronto, you want to throw Philly in there. Then maybe it's just Miami, because I don't know if you put Indiana and Brooklyn there just yet. You have to see how they look when Victor Oladipo comes back for Indiana and Kyrie and Caris LeVert come back for Brooklyn. That might be the way to structure it right now, which I just have reservations about Miami. And I wrote about this earlier in the season, but this is just, you know, just the one nutshell. I said they ranked third in effective field goal percentage overall. Based on the location of their shots, though, they should be 14th in effective field goal percentage. So they're really outperforming expectations there. And look, they take a good amount of the right shots, but they don't get to the rim too frequently. So it's just, I'm just not entirely sold on them. Even their defense, I haven't looked to see if this stabilized, but opponents were just not making their wide open threes against them this season. And so that was another one where I wondered, hey, are they going to be among the best defensive teams in the league? And now it seems to have sort of stabilized, maybe a little bit low, but teams are shooting 36.8% on wide open threes against them. So perhaps that's not as big of a concern. I think they're good and they're better than I expected. I'm not going to loop them in with the Raptors and Celtics right now.
Here are some things I find really intriguing about Miami. As you know, I have already taken victory laps on Bam Adebayo, but I think he's even better than I expected. I could not have predicted 15, 11 and 4 assists. The passing is the truly wild part of this season for him. He's really switchy on defense. He's been phenomenal. Tyler Hero averaging almost 15 points a game and shooting 39% from three. I would never have predicted that. Duncan Robinson is taking 7 threes a game and shooting 43% from three. They're getting contributions from Olynyk, Myers Leonard. They're just having a lot of guys randomly pop up and make contributions that we didn't expect. I think Kendrick Nunn probably goes in that group too. And maybe this is a reason to say it's all going to come crashing down at some point, because maybe two or three of these guys come back to earth a little bit and suddenly they're not near as good. But there's just a lot of encouraging signs all over this roster. And I think their best trade pieces, like I mentioned earlier, Johnson and Waiters, they're not even playing. And so if you replace those guys with another rotation player or even a borderline star like Kevin Love, then they become pretty interesting to me.
Aaron Gordon would be an interesting name for them.
Oh, yeah. That'd be very interesting. He's having a weird season.
He's not been good. Defense is fine, but he has not been good. The thing that's weird with the Heat, too, their defense, they rank in the top 10 of defense in every single shot location except for at the rim, where they're 28th per clean reverse. They're fifth in defending the short mid-range, sixth on long mid-rangers, third defending the mid-range overall, eighth in corner threes, second in above-the-break threes, second in all threes, 28th in opponent percentage at the rim. I just found that wild.
Yeah. Aaron Gordon's shooting 42% from the field and 31% from three, just to emphasize what you said a second ago.
That's actually higher than he was shooting the last time I checked, so congratulations to Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, bringing it up. Okay, this one's kind of fun. Jaylen Brown, all-star reserve or nah?
Ooh, I'm going to defer to you on that one.
I think it's in play. If you look at Boston's roster, they have, I think, four guys with all-star cases right now. They're obviously not going to get four all-stars, but Jaylen Brown right now is averaging 20 points a game, 7 rebounds, shooting 38% from three. I think if Boston gets multiple all-stars, he'd probably be third or fourth in the pecking order. I don't know. You can maybe correct me if that sounds wrong. Gordon Hayward's, you know, probably bringing up the rear just because he's only played in 9 games at this point, and maybe he'll have enough time to build up his resume between now and February. But they're Boston's been really interesting this season. Jalen, this is another team that has a few guys that I think have been better than I expected. They look pretty dang good.
There, you said he'd be third on your list. I would probably only put Kemba in front of him. Are you putting Tatum ahead of him?
Tatum's been really like his Tatum's shooting has not been as good as Brown's, not even close, actually. But I think Tatum's actually been better defensively.
That's probably fair to say. I've been impressed with the frequency with which Jaylen Brown is getting to the rim relative to seasons past. It's actually less often than ever, but he's shooting better than 70% at the rim. And again, you said his 3-point percentage, his free throw attempt rate is down, but his passing feels like it's been a little bit better on drives. He's passing on a higher percentage of his drives than Jason Tatum. I might put him in front of Tatum just because he's been the more consistent player this year.
And I'm looking at the stat sheet now, his effective field goal percentage is almost 9 points higher than Tatum's. I didn't realize that gap existed.
Yeah, Tatum's been, he's hit his threes, even though that has dropped off. He's below 37%. That's not terrible, but it is a career low for him. But he's been just sort of up and down. And he gets to the rim less than Jaylen Brown. He's getting to the rim on 25.2% of his shots, and that's a career low. And he's shooting 52% at the rim. So and those aren't the numbers that everyone's looking at when they're picking All-Star, but I think it's pretty clearly been Jaylen Brown who's the more consistent player this year. And they're just so close when you look at the statistical categories. And I would even say defensively that I think I'd give the edge to Jaylen Brown right now. Kemba's definitely one for me on the Celtics, but then I think I'd go Jaylen Brown when we're looking at an All-Star pecking order.
I was looking at the Celtics roster the other day. They've got 12 guys who've played over 200 minutes. Can you guess how many are below replacement level by box plus minus?
Out of 12?
Yeah.
I'm going to say one.
Ooh, close. Two. It's just Carson Edwards and Grant Williams. That's it. The two rookies.
Carson has huge ass quads.
So that makes up for the below replacement level box plus minus. I can get behind that. But they are deep. They're playing really well. If we got that question about Kyrie Irving, but switch Nets out with Celtics, I think it might be a little bit easier to answer. Okay, we got Justin's question in. He asked us about Jaylen Brown. Kevin Cold is back, and I think we've kind of already answered this. Raptors or Celtics, I'm just going to put him in the same tier.
Yeah, I would too if you had to pick, though.
Probably the Celtics right now.
I want to say the Celtics too, but I feel like I'd pick the Raptors. Maybe I'm just way too high on Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, I was going to say that Siakam and Van Vliet have sort of come back down to earth a little bit in recent games. But they've obviously got a lot of playoff experience. Siakam's been phenomenal this season. I think the talent is a little bit deeper on Boston.
For sure. Toronto's relying on guys that you could easily see fading off as well. You know, is Terrence Davis going to be amazing forever? Is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson going to be an elite offensive rebounder and, you know, be finishing around the rim better than he usually is for the rest of the season? I don't know.
By the way, we talked about this on a different episode. I don't remember which one, but tracking the Marc Gasol 2-point percentage, I think he went 0-for-6 the last game, and now he's down to 32.8% from 2-point range this season.
Look, that's impressive. I feel like that's really difficult. That's
like borderline staggering.
Borderline? That's absolutely staggering.
Okay.
What does he shoot from two for his career?
Let's go back to this. 49.7%.
And that's definitely staggering.
Prior to this season, he was that didn't make a big difference. 49.8 before this season. 32.8 this season. It's just that's wild.
And look, it's under 50% because he's that pick and pop big man. But to see it at 32.8% now is
wild.
Yeah.
At Skills Sunny, a full health Celtics squads will win the East. Am I right? No. I think it's an. I would again. We've already picked the Bucks, so I'll obviously stick with that. But would you be shocked if the Celtics were in the NBA Finals?
No, I think the three teams right now, and you could throw Philly in this because maybe they are built for the playoffs, but the three teams right now that wouldn't shock me at all to come out of the East are Milwaukee, duh, then Boston and Toronto. And I'm on the fence about Philly. I was even reluctant about putting them as the second best team in the East this year, but when they're going to be healthy, their starting five is going to roll over people, and I could see them being a real problem in the playoffs. And so I would throw them too. Miami would surprise me more to come out of the East than any of those other four teams.
I would agree with that. This is a fun one for me. At Real J Friedman, why does Joel Embiid dribble in traffic?
Because the Sixers' floor balance is off. How is he going to get open lanes?
Yeah. The turnover thing with him is just always fascinated me. It's down a little bit this season, but it's actually up from last season. It's down from his rookie levels, but this guy turns the ball over like crazy. 4.3 per 36 minutes for his career. Not a huge deal. Obviously, Philadelphia's been like massively better when he's on the floor over the course of his career, but it's always just something that like jumps out to me. Joel Embiid turnovers.
Look, and he tries to do more off the dribble work from face up positions anyway than most bigs are going to, and so I think that accounts for it. That being said, among every player this season who has appeared in at least five games and is averaging at least 2.5 drives per games, that's a pool of 202 players. Joel Embiid's 21.4 turnover rate is dead last.
Like the highest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you just pull that up since I've read this question?
Yeah.
That was so fast. I'm impressed.
Because we all know that he has like the stuff with the problems in the post. And I just wanted to see because it felt like he was sort of attacking more from face-ups off the dribble this year from what I've seen of him. I wanted to see what that number looked like. And it's predictably high.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
He is turning the ball over on 13.3% of his post-ups, which is about where he was last year, and it's down from 2017, 2018 when he was around 16%. So that's encouraging.
Do they run – I need to watch. I need to, like, really lock into a couple more Philly games.
Fun to watch this year as I thought they were going to be.
Yeah. What I was going to ask is how often do they run just a traditional Simmons Embiid pick and roll where Embiid is like truly rolling to the rim instead of just catching it at the high post or catching it in the low post like he so often does and turning and facing?
This is not going to be a perfect example of that, but Philly is once again dead last in pick and roll ball handler frequency this season.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea of how often
the pick and roll ball handler finishes the possession, right?
Yeah. I mean, we could look at, if you want me to look at the role man, I can do that too. But my whole thing is how effective, we would have to see the specific combination numbers there, but how effective is that? Because how much damage does Joel Embiid screening for Ben Simmons do when guys are just going to go under it?
Yeah. I think that's.
Philly's also dead last in the frequency of possessions that are finished by a role man as well.
Interesting. I think they got to do something to get. To just add a little variety to his offense. I mean, it's not like it's a big problem. He's been above average true shooting wise his entire career. I think that's heavily weighted by how often he gets to the free throw line. But I think if you just sprinkled in some other stuff beyond what they've done with him over the last few years, I do think that would help a little bit. At Bayo Rugaji, hopefully I pronounced that close to correctly. I think we can answer this one pretty quickly. Are the Bucks overhyped?
No. Why? Maybe I shouldn't be answering but
yeah.
They have the best defense in the league. And I feel like when you look at some of their players, let's say specifically a Brook Lopez, Eric Bledsoe has been close to, at least before the quarter poll, was closer to a roller coaster than not. You didn't have Chris Middleton for an extended period of time. This almost feels like a team that maybe might not even reach its absolute apex until we get later in the year.
I actually think they're probably closer to underhyped than overhyped. I feel like we've heard a lot more about the Lakers and the Clippers. even the 76ers have generated a lot of buzz this season. I think the Bucks are somehow at like, what are they, 21-3, flying under the radar a little bit. And maybe it's fair to wonder about them because of the way they flamed out in the playoffs last season. But I think they're phenomenal. They somehow are a little bit deeper than they were last year, I think. Like they've got a bunch of guys contributing off the bench this year. DiVincenzo's been good. Pat Connaughton's been good. There's a lot to love with this Bucks team. George Hill has gone a long way toward replacing what Malcolm Brogdon was doing for them. So I agree. I don't think they're overhyped. In fact, I think they might be underhyped. All right. Last one. This is going to be a dual question. At Stringer Bell and at Sports Talk Lest, they both ask the same thing essentially. Pacers, once Oladipo gets back, can they make any kind of a run?
I would say they're better in the macro than I expected them to be without him. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't see why not. But it also becomes a matter of what does he look like upon return from this quad injury. Like, he might not be someone that immediately helps your 17th ranked offense.
Completely agree. It might take him some time to find his game legs. And we've seen with a lot of significant injuries that sometimes it doesn't happen until the next season. Kristaps Porzingis sat out a year and a half, and he still looks shaky. So these really big injuries and the amount of time that NBA players take off to rehab that stuff now, just exercising an abundance of caution, I do think it takes a while to get back into the flow of things. But if it, you know, let's say it's a quick timeline for him, and in 2 or 3 months he kind of looks like his old self, they're going to be tough. Have you heard this take floating around the last few weeks that like 1 through 6, the East is right there with the West this season?
I've seen the take that I've seen floating around is that the West is not as strong as people make it out to be.
So I think there might be something to both of those. I'm not ready to say the East is like caught up to the West, but when we talk about teams like Indiana and Miami and Boston's better than we thought, and the East still has, you know, major issues at the bottom, but 1 through 6 is pretty dang strong this year.
Do you think that this could just be a gap year for the West, though? You're looking at a banged up Golden State, no Zion in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then Sacramento's been playing better of late, and so I won't use the De'Aaron Fox injury as an excuse for them, and they really haven't been terrible. But we're also then to go with the former of saying that the East is right there, that the West is substantially weaker. You have to kind of believe that Portland and San Antonio are what they've been thus far, which is possible. They're both five games under 500 for San Antonio, 6 for Portland. Maybe they are that bad. But if one of them sort of comes on in the middle of the year, I feel like that could turn pretty quickly.
I do think San Antonio is just what it is, though. And I know that this is one of our areas of disagreement. And then Portland, if they keep losing guys to season-ending injuries every couple weeks, they're going to be in trouble, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're in trouble now. So
yeah.
The question I'm upset that you didn't get to is from Jacob Harmon at J.K. Grin, at J-A-E-K-G-R-I-N.
I thought you would do this.
How much are the Knicks going to beat the Jazz by?
I will say I'll put the over under at 11.5, favoring the Knicks.
That the Jazz should be favored by 11.5, or
no,
or
that... the Knicks should be favored, and RJ Barrett's going to drop 35. Marcus Morris is going to have 30. Mitchell Robinson's going to have 8 blocks. It's going to be a coming out party for the Knicks.
Oh, and someone did ask. This is DJ Oprah Spinfrey. At the Eric
Mazur. Hey, repeat appearance. I will never forget that handle.
Are the Knicks the worst team since the Bobcats? I'm assuming that this is a reference to the 2011-12 Bobcats, who went 7-59. The Knicks aren't even the worst team in net rating this season. So according to Cleaning the Glass, they're 28th in net rating. If you go by Basketball Reference, they're 29th, and they have the 15th worst net rating of all time right now, where Charlotte team was tied for the worst net rating of all time with the 92-93 Dallas Mavericks. Right now, Cleveland has the worst net rating in the NBA, and it is one of the 10 worst of all time. This is not adjusted, though, so that would be something to look into, but I do not think that the Knicks are the worst team since those Bobcats. But if they trade Marcus Morris, the season is still young, is all I'm saying.
I just pulled up the worst winning percentages of all time. That 2011-12 Bobcats team, 10.6%. It's like staggering. It's the second time I've used that word in this podcast. But these Knicks, 2019-20, have the 15th worst winning percentage of all time. Still somehow about 7 percentage points higher than that Bobcats team. You got to be really, really bad to match that 10.6%. I wonder what happens if I do SRS, which is strength of schedule and point differential. Let's see where the Knicks come in on that one. Let's see. 28th worst, and the Golden State Warriors are worse than them. 16th worst SRS of all time for this Warriors team. There are some teams off to some
gap here.
Yeah, really, really bad starts this season. I'm so glad that you mixed in those Knicks questions to close us out, especially the Jazz one.
We're finishing how we started talking about the Knicks.
Yeah. Talking about how the Knicks are going to pound the Jazz just warms the cockles of my heart.
That is a sentence.
let's splice that one out and tweet it or whatever we do for the. All right. That wraps up another mailbag. Thank you to all of you for your fantastic questions. As always, if we didn't get to yours, I'm sorry. Keep reaching out, and hopefully we'll get to them on the next one. If you want to get at us on Twitter, Dan's at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The sponsor is at Blue Wire Pods. As always, we encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And until next time, we leave you with a shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson.